Our topic today is not a conspiracy theory. Evil and strong delusion abound.
Now, it's so crystal clear, COVID was simply used as the excuse to implement the agenda. And I mean, boy, have they implemented in a fast and furious way.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, Radio for the Remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. Today, Jan features two guests, Scott Shera, who recently lost a daughter to a reckless hospital, and Vera Sharav, a Holocaust survivor. Sharav is warning the free world that it is following the path of Nazi Germany, and particularly with COVID issues. Here is today's uninterrupted programming.
Say, I'm so glad you could join me today on Understanding the Times Radio. And my two guests for the hour, Scott Shera and Vera Sharav, have teamed up to sound a warning that medical malpractice could come to your home as it has crept into America and other parts of the world through the COVID ordeal beginning in the spring of 2020. I'll just say that Scott Shera has a deeply moving story to share. His 19-year-old daughter, Grace, was, he says, murdered by an Appleton, Wisconsin hospital in October of 2021. Grace was Down syndrome, and medical personnel stressed that term over and over and over again. Grace would have made a recovery from COVID back in October of a year ago had the hospital in Appleton not dispensed certain drugs together that, quite frankly, were a fatal blow. Vera Sharav became a part of Adolf Hitler's final solution when she was just 3 years old, living in Romania. She and her family were taken to a concentration camp in Ukraine, and she and her mother survived, and she founded the Alliance for Human Research Protection. We'll say more about that later, which is basically fighting for medical ethics. And she has been outspoken about COVID-19 and how it has changed the lives of millions of people in America and around the world. Vera reminds the world that Hitler started his extermination plan with the disabled, just like Grace Shera. And they were dispensable. Quite frankly, they were inconvenient. Vera reminds the world that there are many parallels with the Holocaust that are going on today as it concerns the COVID pandemic. And that there is an agenda. You're going to hear that term quite a bit this hour, the agenda. And by the way, Nazi Germany, medicine was weaponized in Nazi Germany. And I think you can make the connection there, the parallel. So what I'm going to do to introduce these two, I'm going to play a short 2.5 minute clip. By the way, the hour will be uninterrupted, but this clip, they're saying some short little statements, I think, that say a whole lot in just a few seconds. Then I'm going to bring my guests on, and we're going to have a dialogue, a discussion for 1 hour with no interruption for the hour.
If you don't know the past, then the whole thing makes no sense. And most people, in fact, feel as though nothing is making sense.
This agenda that they push seemed like it was innocent at the beginning, but it never was innocent.
And no.
That agenda, which, as it applied to Grace, was trust the white coat. So that trust the white coat has been part of the agenda for a long time. And we fell trapped to it. And ultimately, that agenda caused the murder of my beautiful daughter, Grace.
Everything from the beginning of March 2020, every directive that we've gotten about what we have to do to protect ourselves from COVID was a lie. Every single one.
They've got immunity from liability. They have the financial temptation that only the most godly of men could turn down. And then you have the shroud of secrecy because the family's not there.
The social distancing, the masks, the lockdowns, the isolation, and the constant barrage of listening to the news. All of it was just absolutely shaped to get people conditioned to become obedient serfs.
They killed Grace while we were there.
When the children died, doctors filled out death certificates stating that the cause of death was natural causes.
Absolutely. I mean, now it's so crystal clear. COVID was simply used as the excuse to implement the agenda. And I mean, boy, have they implemented in a fast and furious way.
The first victims of medical murder were German infants and children, and then the mentally ill and other disabled in the nursing home residents. And they did it all in the same way. You had the medical doctors assuring the families, when they were taking away the children, for example, they assured them that they were going to be getting special treatment to improve their health.
Scott Sherrill, welcome to the studio of Understanding the Times Radio.
Thanks for having me, Jan.
Vera Sharoff, thank you for joining us from New York.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Let's start with you, Scott. Your ordeal is now a year old, and the hurt hasn't gone away, obviously. You and Grace, your 19-year-old daughter, Down syndrome, you were best friends. She was high-functioning. She played violin. She spoke Spanish. She was learning to drive. Amazing. She was funny. What happened in October 2021?
The short story is they used three different ways to take Grace out. The first way that they did it was they used a sedation med called Presidex. Presidex is meant to be used for no more than 24 hours, according to the package insert, which are the rules they're supposed to follow. They had Grace on that med for four full days before her last day.
She had COVID.
Yes, she did.
And did she have pneumonia?
She had COVID pneumonia.
COVID pneumonia.
But she didn't have regular pneumonia. COVID pneumonia is somewhat of a misnomer, I believe, in order to make it seem like your lungs are filling
up.
But
she was probably going to be okay had they not done this.
I'm 100% positive she would have, because I ended up in a different hospital 3 days after she died, and they followed 100% different protocol, and I just about died the first night. They turned me around in 24 hours.
So the two hospitals had two different ways of doing business. One, horrific, and the one you happened to go to did everything just right. So that is interesting. So go on about the medications.
So that first medication, Presidex, the package insert says no more than 24 hours. If it's used more than 24 hours, it causes acute respiratory failure. On Grace's death certificate, the first cause of death listed is acute respiratory failure. Mm-hmm. So they caused directly the first cause of death and received a bonus for listing that cause.
You feel this was intentional for money. It was intentional. She was handicapped. You have called it premeditated murder.
I've come to that conclusion after about 500 hours of research. In April, I had about 500 hours of research in, and by that time, I couldn't see it another way. But it took a lot to get me there.
And my understanding, Scott, because you've got expenses, you've got 17 billboards, you've got other expenses, you actually went to GoFundMe to raise some money, which you did. You raised money through GoFundMe, but they actually shut you down because you were misrepresenting the facts. True?
They said that we were part of a misinformation campaign.
So you opened the Give, Send, Go?
We did.
And that's on ouramazinggrace.net?
Yes, it is.
And so no problem there?
No problem there at all, but obviously GoFundMe is owned by somebody else, and if you spread the truth, that's misinformation today.
Vera, I know the Nazis targeted the very young under age 3. In fact, you were age 3 when you and your family were torn away from Romania and taken to a camp. Again, it was in Ukraine. When did you come to America?
In January 1948. I was 10 and a half by then.
And how did you and your mother, and we need this in perhaps a paragraph, but how did you survive the Holocaust? Obviously, millions did not.
First of all, we were not in a death camp.
Yep.
And there were more than 4,000 camps all over Europe. A few of them were death camps, but others were not. There were slave labor camps. And our camp was essentially a camp where they left us to starve. There was nothing organized, really, and no food was handed out. Nothing was given. And people did, in fact, die. My father died at the camp of an infectious disease, typhus. People died of starvation, of infectious diseases, of cold, and of course, neglect. There was no hygiene.
Yeah.
The other part of it was that there was constant fear of being sent to the death camps because there were lists. Every so often, lists would be put out, and people who were on the list were sent to death camps or for slave labor.
But you were going to be deemed an orphan, and actually by your mother, just to save you.
That was after 3 years.
Yes.
It was in 1944 when Romanian government realized that the Nazis were losing the war. Just as the Nazis were losing the war was precisely when they were in a frenzy to implement the final solution. Many were killed in those final months. As I said, the Romanian government decided to detach itself from their alliance with the Nazis. And so this was in part a gesture that they allowed some 1,900 Jewish orphans to return to Romania if they had someone in Romania, a relative or someone that they knew. So my mother, yes, she lied to put me on that list and get me out because they expected the end. They knew what was happening.
I want to quote you here, Vera. You say, what happened to Grace, Grace Shera, what happened to Grace and what happened to many disabled and elderly in Western Europe, Australia, Canada, the United States in March and April of 2020 was medical murder. And then you go on to say that medicine and government sort of merged and the Hippocratic Oath was torn up. The pledge to do no harm got replaced with allegiance to the greater good. I'm paraphrasing some things you've said. You've also said that we need to stop watching mainstream media because they're all reading from the same script. How true. And they have bombarded people with fear-mongering, which is exactly the same thing they did in Nazi times. That's how they controlled the population, through fear. So all of those were quotes or paraphrases from you. But let's go back to your observation of what happened to Grace Shera. And I'm sure in that you and Scott Shera here have teamed up and you are doing interviews together as we are today. Your thoughts on what happened to Grace and the fact that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions more like her, in other words, disabled, were taken out in this COVID plandemic. And folks, I just used a term I've stayed away from, and that's the term plandemic. But after what I've learned now, after 2.5 years, it's a plandemic. Go ahead, Vera.
Yeah, it is a plandemic, and it's following a very detailed script, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's followed, interestingly enough, in all the wealthy developed countries. Part of that plan is to get rid of the economic burden, which is the same that the Nazis had. One of the goals for what was called T4, that medical murder program was called T4. It was supposed to be secret, but people knew about it after a certain point when relatives got death certificates from relatives who were supposed to be getting special treatment. Mm-hmm. People understood what was happening. So in the Western countries, orders were given, governments gave orders to hospitals. They began to dictate to hospitals how patients were to be treated. This is an incursion into medical practice. And the only reason people trust doctors is because they expect that doctors have sworn to do no harm.
That's right.
And that's the only reason that we look up to doctors more than to any other professionals. Well, once doctors become government agents, they no longer owe allegiance to the individual. And unfortunately, people don't understand that. When doctors join forces with government, they become government agents and carry out government-dictated medical policies. And we're seeing that in a very major way with this COVID pandemic. Doctors to this day are forbidden to prescribe existing, fully FDA-licensed medications that for decades have been used, and therefore there's a long safety record, they're forbidden to give those treatments for COVID patients. Why? Why?
My hunch is it's the profit motive. You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have on the line from New York, Vera Sharab. She's a Holocaust survivor. I have in studio with me Scott Shera. And Scott's the dad of Grace, who lost her life in a medical system in Wisconsin. I'm going to give some websites here in just a second, but I want to play a quick clip. And Scott, it's from your website, ouramazinggrace.net, and you're talking here about Grace's last day. Now, let me just clarify, because here we're introducing Jessica. Jessica is your other daughter. Jessica had to step in and oversee Grace because you got sick and had to leave. I think you were thrown out of the hospital besides.
Correct.
You're a little aggressive and they said enough of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Grace's last day is so horrific. Starting at 8 o'clock in the morning, the doctor called Cindy and I at home and made the comment about how great of a day Grace had the day before. He was a very smooth talker. His purpose of calling us was the fifth time that they wanted us to give the pre-authorization for a ventilator, and we said no again. So she's on max dose of Presidex starting at 5:46 p.m. They gave her a dose of lorazepam, 5:49 another dose of lorazepam, and at 6:15 a dose of morphine as an IV push. They gave Grace a combination of meds that none of us could have survived. It has a black box warning that says to not combine those drugs because it causes death. If you use morphine, they're supposed to monitor the patient and have the reversal drug bedside, neither of which they did.
I was always touching Grace's hand. I was always holding her, and she didn't feel right to me. So this nurse, I asked her, I said, does Grace feel cold to you? She feels so cold to me. She said, no, she doesn't feel cold to me. And I couldn't tell you how many minutes went past, but she just didn't seem right yet, and she felt even colder. I tried finding a pulse. I couldn't find a pulse. I lifted up her eyelid, and I saw her eyes roll back, and I knew something wasn't right. So I went out and snuck my head out again. I said, you know, I need help. Since someone come look at her, like, what's going on? She's not doing well. Her numbers are going down, too. So I instantly got my parents on the phone.
At 7:20, Jessica called Cindy and I on FaceTime, panicking. She said, Dad, Grace's numbers are dropping like crazy. I said, get the nurses in. She said, they won't come in. I've been trying. So Cindy and I holler through the phone, save our daughter. They holler back, she's DNR, do not resuscitate. One of the nurses read off the computer that the doctor ordered Grace to be DNR and they can't do anything about it.
Well, there was roughly 30 to 40 nurses out in that hallway. No one at all lifted a finger. She was so drugged up. We didn't even see her take a final breath. And I just watched her fade away.
Okay, Scott, I hear from some medical personnel who are horrified at what's been going on for 2.5 years. But we just heard about some 30 nurses not far from Grace's room. None of them wanted to intervene. An ICU nurse not understanding that these meds were horrific. Are they all going along with the system? And the system obviously is to kill and destroy here.
That was one of the pieces that put me over the edge. When you look at how this had to happen, that not only did the doctor have to order the meds, the pharmacist had to sign off on the order. Because those meds are contraindicated, the alarm had to be overridden. And the nurse in charge of Grace's care that last day, the last 2 days, in fact, had 14 years of ICU experience. You can't make that combination up. So when you see that, along then with the DNR, we found out subsequently the DNR was put on Grace 8 minutes after they increased the dose of Presidex to 14 times.
You didn't put any DNR on?
Absolutely not. Why would we do that when the doctor calls us at 8 o'clock in the morning saying how great of a day Grace had the day before? We should work on nutrition.
What changed?
So this is speculation. In my opinion, what changed at that point is the purpose of his call that morning wasn't to talk about nutrition. It was to ask us for the fifth time for a pre-authorization for a ventilator. Once they realized that Cindy and I were not going to agree to a ventilator, remember, Grace never needed a ventilator. Once they realized that we weren't going to agree to a ventilator, which is approximately a $300,000 payday, I think they had to figure out a different way to take her out.
You have said bluntly in other interviews, follow the money trail. Why don't you talk about that for a minute? Because this is probably the bottom line. As you have said previously, it would take a terribly righteous person to turn down the kind of money. As a matter of fact, you said, we're not naming the hospital or the hospital system, but that they did glean $10 billion thanks to COVID.
Just in the first year of COVID.
In the first year.
Yes, and on a macro basis, the finances, people have a hard time grasping this, but I'm going to connect the dots. 39% of our federal budget annually, $2.2 trillion, goes to fund the elderly and the disabled. Our annual federal budget is $5 trillion. $2.2 trillion, 39%, goes to fund those two population groups. Those two population groups are the number one and number two classifications of people who died in COVID hospitals. Those classifications are simply facts. Those are not comorbidities. And when you put this into the perspective of what the government did to pay hospitals, so the system Grace died in received $10 billion. On a national basis, in the first 22 months of COVID, the government paid out $4 trillion. That's 80% of the annual budget paid out to hospitals in the form of bonuses to kill people.
Shocking. Vera, do you want to comment here on the money trail?
I want to say that while that huge budget is earmarked for the care of the population, the elderly and the disabled, it isn't exactly going for their care. It is going for the bureaucracy that is paid to give care, but they are the least beneficiaries of that money. This has been going on for a very long time. Anyone who deals with those care places, particularly government funded, knows very well that the care is extremely poor. And no, they're not spending the money on the people, but rather on the agencies.
Here's how you get a hold of Vera Sharav. Her organization is the Alliance for Human Research Protection, AHRP.org. You can reach Scott at the incredible website of Grace's life and story and of what happened in the last year, ouramazinggrace.net, ouramazinggrace.net. And folks, if you look at some of the videos of Grace, you will see she's a dynamic, funny, talented, plays violin. Yes, she's Down syndrome, but very, very gifted 19-year-old that they took out back in October of 2021. Quick heads up, we have an Understanding the Times event coming up Thursday, October the 6th, here in the Twin Cities. Remember, all of these events every other month are live streamed to the whole world, and we have dozens of countries watching them, thankfully. And that would be live streamed at markhenryministries.com. We'll be featuring Pastor Billy Crone that night on Thursday, October the 6th. Revived Church, formerly Brooklyn Park Evangelical Free, for those of you in the Twin Cities, and realize most of you listening around the country. Again, you can live stream it from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on October the 6th, and we will offer a DVD on it about a week later. We archive it at no cost at olivetreeviews.org. That's the Olive Tree website, olivetreeviews.org, and go to video. It'll be archived at markhenryministries.com and live streamed at markhenryministries.com. If you want to watch it live, submit questions that night. Mark Henry and I will be the co-hosts for the evening. Again, this is every other month, Understanding the Times, Thursday, October the 6th, Pastor Billy Crone, 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. If you can't join us, other ways of participating, watching, post-program, getting the DVD, etc. We will be talking about some extremely cutting-edge and serious issues. We've had over a year of these events, and about 1.5 million have watched online in that last year. Vera, help us understand the Nuremberg Code. You spoke at the 75th anniversary of the Nuremberg Code very recently. And what happened 75 years ago that would apply to today?
What happened was that some of the perpetrators were put on trial. And particularly important was the doctor's trial. This has never happened before or after, for that matter, where doctors were put on trial for crimes against humanity. Mm-hmm. And those crimes were defined. At the end of the trial, after the verdicts were issued, the Nuremberg Code was attached to those verdicts in August 1947. Now, the Nuremberg Code is the most important medical ethics document in the history of medicine. It incorporates the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm, and it incorporates the 1931 ethical guidelines that were in force in Germany. Germany was the only one that had such ethical guidelines. They were formulated actually by Dr. Moses, who was horrified about infants who died as a result of contaminated vaccine, experimental vaccines. Of course, when the Nazis took over, they kind of discarded completely the ethical guidelines, and he was sent to Theresienstadt, where he died. But the jurists, and these were American jurists who convened the trial, the doctor's trial, they sat in judgment. They had medical consultants as well. So it was a very, very special kind of group of judges. And they put together the Nuremberg Code, which was not any more addressed to the German, the Nazi doctors, but rather to the world. This was universal. The Nuremberg Code assures every human being, every race and creed, doesn't matter where they live, that they have an absolute right to voluntary, informed consent without any coercion of any kind, and that they have to be able to understand the risks, the purpose of the experiment. It goes into great detail about the responsibility of doctors. Doctors are supposed to ensure that the voluntary informed consent is absolutely enforced, and they cannot delegate this requirement to anyone else. This is very important because today what you have, in other words, part of it was because during the Nuremberg trials, many of the defendants, both doctors and the other scientists and military people, they all chimed in, oh, we were just obeying orders. We didn't issue the orders. Well, that didn't wash with the jurists. Saying that you were following orders does not wash. That's no defense. This is very important to understand now, too, because when government issues orders and doctors and nurses are following them, they're not released from their responsibility, their professional and moral responsibility. When the day of reckoning will come before a court of law, they will be held accountable.
I want to play one more clip from ouramazinggrace.net, and that's Grace's website that Scott has created here in the last year, because this is, Scott, it's you and Cindy talking about Grace, and it's very short, but you stayed here. She was your best friend. Grace was your best friend. Losing your best friend, and we can reference you lost a son in 2018 in a tragic way as well, so you've had some grief to deal with. We probably need to talk about that because my listeners, every one of them without exception, is dealing with grief of some kind. Grief or loss, betrayal.
Grace was phenomenal. She loved everyone and she loved everything.
She was my best buddy. She went hunting with me. We got her a red convertible when she turned 18. Yeah, it was just a joy. We'd get out on the highway and she would say, let her rip, Dad. And so we would.
We found out that we were blessed with Grace having Down syndrome when she was born. Down syndrome is actually the presence of a third 21st chromosome, which she called her love chromosome, because everybody that knows a child with Down syndrome, they just love unconditionally. Down syndrome did not stop Grace whatsoever.
There wasn't a thing she didn't do. She rode horse, she played violin. My wife, who's gifted in teaching, taught her how to read and write.
The things that Grace taught me were really above and beyond whatever I taught her.
I say thank you very much.
That was a wonderful clip, Scott. And you say, quoting you here, you say, we saw firsthand how Grace was treated at this hospital. We have medical records of 22 doctor reports where they stated 36 times that Grace was Down syndrome. Why would they include that fact so often? It shouldn't make a difference in her treatment. If you have a loved one, and this is your exhortation to my audience, if you have a loved one with a disability, please know what you're getting into when you take them to a hospital, because the white coats shouldn't simply be trusted. Make them earn your trust. Explain that.
Well, we go into a hospital just assuming that they're following the Hippocratic Oath, which is, in short, do no harm. So you go in assuming that. So then, if you're wise, you want to be an advocate, which anybody with a disabled child knows you have to advocate. But what you assume with advocacy is that it means you're there to comfort your child and that the doctor's going to keep you posted literally as to what's going on and you're involved with the care. Well, that's not what's happening. What's happening now is there's no informed consent whatsoever. They're doing all of these steps without getting you involved at all. And they have a hospitalist in charge of the care, which really becomes the person that's the smooth talker so that they can implement all of these things without you knowing. So you have to absolutely insist that they keep you informed of every single step. And then when you start asking questions and you find out that they're not doing that, I would tell you instantly get your disabled loved one out of that hospital and move them to another one that is going to follow your directive. You're the one who is in charge of your daughter or son's care, not the hospitalist.
Both of you have talked to me about the agenda. We use that word again. The agenda, and Vera, you address this all the time, the agenda of the World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, et al. And you and Scott, you know this agenda is evil. Many of my listeners know this agenda is evil. But Vera, many call us conspiracy theorists because we talk about World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, etc. Yet Anthony Fauci said in Trump's first term, there will be a pandemic.
Exactly. How did he know?
How did he know? So that's why we call this a plandemic.
Exactly. Because he wasn't the only one who predicted. It was predicted in 2010 by the Rockefeller Foundation as well. And they actually did the whole scenario of how the coronavirus pandemic would be dealt with. That includes the masking and the isolation and all of it. It was all planned, yes. I'd like to just address the idea about conspiracy theories.
Yep, go ahead.
It's sort of a nice term as a throwaway. In other words, it's meant to deplatform you as if it's disgraceful. Well, first of all, I wish it was just a theory. If it was a theory, it wouldn't hurt anybody. But it isn't just a theory. There are plans which they actually have. People can read those plans, like on the World Economic Forum. They can read Klaus Schwab's book, COVID-19, The Great Reset. And they can read what that Great Reset is meant to be. That's the agenda. And that agenda includes, again, he articulated it. He said, you will own nothing, but you'll be happy. Notice he didn't say, we will own nothing. Oh, no. You will own nothing. I will own everything. That's still agenda. They want to eliminate your autonomy, your freedom, your assets. They want to control all the world's resources, natural resources, financial resources, and human resources. They want to eliminate much of the world population and have the rest enslaved.
Vera Sharov is a Holocaust survivor. She came to America in 1948. Both she and her mother survived. Her father did not. Scott, we're talking World Economic Forum here. Bill Gates, we've named them, Anthony Fauci, etc. And you're very outspoken on Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, the purpose and the goals of some of these agendas. Talk to me about what your perception is of Agenda 21 and Agenda 30. And again, you're going to be called a conspiracy theorist. I happen to agree with you, but we're still going to be called a conspiracy theorist. But go ahead.
First, I'm just a dad learning all of this in real time. The people like Vera have known this for decades. But as I see Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, I've dug into it and saw it with my own eyes. So as I see it, it is the natural result of a world without God. Mm-hmm. If God is not in charge, we have to figure out how to take care of the planet. And so very simply, if I didn't believe in God, I'd probably come up with this same idea. Mm-hmm. We have to control the climate and we have to control the population. It makes logical sense, but it makes no sense at all if you understand that God is in charge. So that's how I've been able to frame this and come to grips that you think, how could people be this evil? But it is under the context of a world without God. So they're simply implementing a belief system that they actually subscribe to.
Okay, but then what you are saying is grace is a victim of Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, ultimately.
Absolutely.
How do we fight back? Just through education and information like we're doing today? It's hard to push back. This is a globalist effort, both Agenda 21 and 2030. It's the powerful elite of the world who are trying to bring about a one-world government. You and I know that's outlined in the Bible. It's outlined in the book of Revelation. Clearly, Revelation 13 spells this all out. So we can't stop it. It's coming. It's coming like a freight train.
We absolutely don't have the ability to stop it if we're in God's timeline, which I believe we are. And so stopping it isn't necessarily what this is about, but we certainly have a responsibility to become educated as to what's going on and then do our part. So our part, as Vera very succinctly points out, is to not fall trapped to these mandates. We have to resist when we are responsible to follow man's laws when they're not in conflict with God's laws. Well, these mandates and the vaccine, all these things they're doing are obviously in conflict. And so those are things that we should do to resist. And that would fall under obedience to our Lord.
I actually want to go there in just a few minutes. How should we respond to the things that we're hearing today? And both you and Vera give some options as to how we might respond. Before I do that, I want to play one more clip and get your response. I'm going to get both of your response, because when I heard this a month ago, it happened to be Tucker Carlson, and he is calling out Scarf Lady Deborah Birx. I don't have to say any more. The clip will say it all.
So how did they release a vaccine and then make it mandatory when they didn't understand the long-term effects of the drug? That's a very good question. Here's Deborah Birx. She's the former White House COVID response director, again on Fox News.
I knew these vaccines were not going to protect against infection, and I think we overplayed the vaccines, and it made people then worry that it's not going to protect against severe disease and hospitalization. It will, but let's be very clear. 50% of the people who died from the Omicron surge were older, vaccinated.
What? Stop the press. Quote, I knew these vaccines were not going to protect against infection. Really, Deborah Birx? But somehow you forgot to mention that as people were being fired from their jobs for not taking this on the premise that if they took it, they would never be infected? When do you get criminally charged? Soon, we hope.
Very well put, Tucker. Scott, your thought on that?
The propaganda machine is why these type of things get squashed when they get out into the public. So Tucker Carlson has 3 million viewers every night. But that's only 3 million out of 330 million. So that story needs to get traction so all 330 million people hear it. But it will never do that. The propaganda machine shuts these things down. Tucker Carlson is an anomaly in the news agencies.
Vera, I have heard you say that the purpose of the vaccine is really just to get people to have a digital ID or a digital passport. And of course, and then you reflect back again to Nazi Germany, which is your background, and I happen to have read William Black's book, IBM and the Holocaust. So during the Holocaust, Hitler had to track the Jews. They didn't have computers. They had the IBM punch card system, which tracked every Jew in Europe and was the precursor to the computer. And all of that, in a sense, was a precursor to digital ID and digital passports. But you are very blunt about the fact that the vaccine purpose is to get people to have a digital ID or passport.
Yeah. Early on, before they unrolled, as they called it, the vaccine, they already were researching, experimenting with chips. Bill Gates paid for that one. It was done at MIT, where you would have a chip inserted into you. And it could be done either with a vaccine or some sort of a punch thing under your skin. Now, that kind of a digital surveillance ID is far, far more effective in essentially surveying you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, remotely. It doesn't have to be with anyone listening at your door or having all kind of tools that were used, for example, both the Nazis and then later the Stasi, the communists, had various surveillance methods. But this is, it's in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever you go, they can follow you. And the thing that they want to do as well, and they're quite open about it, they want to have that same digital ID serve as a financial pass. You won't need credit cards and bank passports and all that. It'll all be on this one format, a digital format. And so if you misbehave, they can just turn off your life. Everything. You won't be able to buy groceries. You won't be able to go out of your house. The model is there. People need to look carefully at how the Chinese treat the Chinese.
Absolutely. It's terrifying.
One of the clips that I saw that still haunts me, and it's hard to haunt me after I know what I know, but Chinese people online to show their passports, whatever papers, they're on their knees. They're on their knees in the streets lining up. Now, that's where they want to get all of us to be subservient in that way. You asked something before that I would like to address, which is what can we do? And especially when it comes to the medical aspect, to protect yourself. We've actually established a special website, Nuremberg75.com, where you can download the Nuremberg Code and read it. Anybody with a fifth grade education can understand every word of it. It was meant to be understood by ordinary people. It is your best defense. It's like a weapon of defense, because you take that to your doctor or the hospital and you tell them they've got to abide by that and explain to you everything that they want to do and get your consent, your informed consent. If enough people did that, bombarded the medical establishment, believe me, you'd see something change.
Nuremberg75.com. Go ahead.
Whenever I've mentioned it, people by the hundreds and thousands, they download it and read it carefully, and then you know what you have on your side, a legal document. The only reason that it hasn't been used enough is because I think lawyers have been too lazy. It has been cited in U.S. courts, federal courts, and it stands. It just needs to be used. It needs to be utilized so that there are more precedent, more cases that will cite it.
Scott, you said to me, and I only want to take literally a minute on this, but it was encouraging to me personally, and we all need encouragement these days, that Understanding the Times Radio actually spurred you on to do some of what you're doing. Why don't you share that? Because that's encouraging that radio has that kind of an outreach and spurred you to become active.
My wife Cindy was listening to your program on the second Saturday in January. I was working in my office and she said, "Scott, get in here. Jan's talking to a couple ladies and it sounds just like our case." And we were debating whether we should jump in with both feet and start sharing the story. And before the break, you said, "Before the break, I want to play this clip of a dad who lost his Down syndrome girl." And you played the entire Newsmax clip. Mm-hmm. And
of you.
Of me on Newsmax, yes. Mm-hmm. And I got chills. I could hardly believe it. And that's the day that we decided to jump into this fight with both feet.
That's in January. Now we're in the fall. And that was with Twyla Brace and Marjorie Holston. Marjorie Holston lost her mother in a situation very similar to yours. Her mother was not handicapped other than by age, which obviously is today a handicap. Scott, you emphasize that faith in God is a powerful weapon to combat the dark agenda that has escalated beyond the comprehension of the average person. In other words, the spiritual factor here, without the spiritual factor, we could go out of our minds. You could go out of your mind with grief. For one thing, you're going to see grace again, and probably soon. I maintain the rapture is, well, this afternoon perhaps, so we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful reunion, those of us who know the Lord personally. So faith, in your case, plays a huge role. Why don't you talk about that for a minute? Because we've got people listening who say, you know, how do people like Scott Shera even cope with this kind of memory that he's got to deal with every day?
There's a number of elements of faith. I'll emphasize two right now. One is that God is sovereign. So God knew the date that Grace was going to die. He knew the circumstances. He knew all those things before Grace took her first breath. So having confidence in God's sovereign will is paramount to being in this fight. So you realize that God's got this. And that's the second point. The story that I'd like to just comment on is that after Travis took his life on October 9th of 2018, and Grace and I were riding in my truck the day after Travis died, and I said to Grace, you know God's got this, right? She said, I know, Dad. And the thing is she really did know. In my mind at that point, I didn't know. It was in my head, but for Grace, it was in her heart. Mm-hmm. And that faith that she has, the childlike faith, is an unbelievable thing that she blessed us with. And that childlike faith is the confidence that I am learning to have that God really does this, as dire as things look right now, and things are going to get substantially worse.
They are.
But God still got this. No matter how bad it gets, God is still in charge.
And you're working somewhat on forgiveness. Am I right there? You're struggling with forgiveness, perhaps?
Thankfully, God did that work in me. I never asked him to put inside me the forgiveness towards the doctor and nurse. I mean, who can do that? No human can forgive somebody who killed their daughter. But in the process of me going to the hospital and then Grace's funeral, God got inside of me and he broke me. And at that point, I never asked him for the forgiveness necessary, but he put it inside of me. It's obvious he knew I was going to have a fire inside of me to share the story, and you can't be sharing it unless you've forgiven, because that's what God's job is to train us in the things that are important, and forgiveness is critical. Mm-hmm. So I'm, of course, thankful to him that he did all that. That's what the gospel is. If I could forgive myself, I don't need him.
You can reach Scott at ouramazinggrace.net, ouramazinggrace.net. Reach Vera, AHRP.org, and that stands for the Alliance for Human Research Protection, AHRP.org. And Vera, you talked about what can we do going forward, and then you say in an answer to your own question, you say, don't give in to the mandates and to the dictates that are wrong. Now we realize things were wrong. I just played a clip of Deborah Burke saying, hey, I knew the vaccines weren't going to work. And yet the entire country, in fact, 200 nations gave in to the mandates and dictates. That's billions of people gave in. You're saying, don't give in.
That's right. And right now, they're unrolling the boosters.
Yeah.
As I speak. And with absolutely no evidence of safety from human trials. None. Zero. No vaccine has ever in the history of the world been put out to the market, put out for millions of people to take it with such short notice without, essentially, they don't even bother testing at all. This is really a question. Will people, again, line up for what the authority admits it wasn't supposed to help against infection in the first place? We just said so. Just think about that. Think about really the evil and cynicism. Part of it is there's a great deal of cynicism and contempt for human beings. These globalists, the ones who are really in charge of the agenda, these are truly, truly evil.
Yep.
And most people cannot comprehend. They cannot believe that another human being can be truly evil. These people are evil. And they are planning to hack. They see human beings as, quote, hackable animals. So not only don't they believe in God, they don't believe in anything that's human. Anything special about human. They don't believe in norms, in values, nothing moral, no emotional ties. They want to break up the family. They are breaking up genders. Children are being, when you think about children having surgeries to change their sex. This is worse than barbarism.
Speaking of children, what about vaccinating children? Parents need to step up to the plate and absolutely say no here. And eventually there's going to be some parents who simply will not forgive themselves when these children are harmed. I mean, as we speak, there are children and certainly teens and young adults being harmed with heart issues and other things because of these injections.
I agree with you completely. I think some parents will go out of their minds with guilt. And all I can do, all you can do, is try to warn them to get off that train. Get off that train. As a matter of fact, there are many thoughtful Jews who said, you know, every train that was going, you know, to Auschwitz, there were always some who jumped off. Very few, but there were. And many of those who jumped out, even though they could have died, it was very dangerous, after all, moving train, but many of them actually survived. And more would have survived had more jumped.
You made a statement, and let me just insert here. And by the way, Vera, you and I talked on the phone the other day, and I told you I had written a book on the Holocaust, True Story of Anita Dittmann, Trapped in Hitler's Hell. And my audience knows of the book and the DVD. And folks, it's in my online store, and I'm not bringing this in here to make a sale, but it's just my subject of that book and video is Anita Dittmann, who passed away 2 years ago, almost to the day. She happened to be a Jewish believer during the Holocaust. She was, oh, it's a wonderful story. But if you'd like to understand the angle, half the angle here this hour has been Vera's story of how do we make some comparisons here? What are some parallels between Nazi Germany and the Western world today as it concerns the compliance of people with all the things we're talking about, the injections, the mandates, the dictates that have come down? But you know, Vera, what I learned is the Jews, all of them, didn't believe what Hitler, they didn't believe what he was saying, that he would follow through.
That's right. This is why I'm screaming my head off to listen to what they are saying. Just now, in May 2022, at the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, who is the architect of this Great Reset, right? I quote, "Let's be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, a powerful community here in this room. We have the means to impose the state of the world," unquote.
Thank you. Very well said. Some could have, and some did get out, by the way. Some did get out of Europe. Some didn't have the money. They just couldn't get out. As a matter of fact, the subject of my book, Anita and her mother, the sister got out, and then Anita and her mother were going to get out the next day out of Europe, go to England. But the next day was September 1st, 1939. The borders were all closed, so they missed it by 24 hours. Had the Jews acted and gotten out, many, many would have been saved. I'm running out of time. Scott, I want to throw this to you. I'm literally down to 3 minutes here. What do you want my audience to take away from this hour? And obviously, we have the God factor, and you've already expressed that. We've got the fact that in your case, you're going to see, as many of my listeners will see their loved ones again, I think sooner rather than later. And the ultimate fact that you and I know God has everything under control. For some reason, you've been given a tough assignment, but I got to tell you, every one of my listeners has a tough assignment of some kind.
Absolutely. And I'm thankful for the tough assignment. I am humbled to be picked to be able to do something like this. So you asked, what would I want the audience to take home? There's several things. I would say that the number one short term is wake up. The lane that we're in is the hospital killing lane. And of course, we've expanded it to vaccines and all kinds of things. And Vera complements that quite a bit. So wake up and see what is actually happening. So that's the first thing. The more important thing is time is urgent. And that is by far and away the most important take-home message, is that time is urgent to get right with God. If you don't know God, now is the time. If you do know God, it's time to wake up and do something with the one talent that God gave you. If he's given you more than that, do something with that. But to keep your head in the sand and do nothing with what we're sharing is not acceptable anymore. Time is too short. We are in the days of Noah.
Amen. Vera, you have a closing thought? I've got a minute left.
I would emphasize exactly the same thing. The time is now. There will be no rescuers. There were three armies that rescued the survivors that survived. This time, there are no rescuers. We are our own rescuers. And if we don't act, we will be annihilated. Mm-hmm. That's their plan. And they're implementing it piece by piece.
Well, that's the global elite again. Folks, we've talked about evil this hour. I want to go out of the program reading 3-4 verses out of Psalm 2. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. In other words, these evil people. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I want to thank you for listening, folks. I want to thank you, Scott, for coming in today. I want to thank you, Vera, for your story and for all you're doing. And, folks, I don't know how we'll top this, but we'll talk to you again next week. You are the love song
we'll sing forever. Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. As the world grows darker, remember that God will never leave you nor forsake you. You are engraved on the palm of his hand, and he allows every circumstance to happen so that everything can fall into place.